I walked in. I said, yeah, I already have my nomination. I'm just kind of waiting to hear back on my acceptance letter. And he's like, I'll give you a 4-year scholarship to ROTC at UW right now.
I'm Joe C. Mandel, and this is Raven Conversations. And today I'm joined by what I think is one of the biggest characters in the Washington National Guard. I've known him a very long time. He's laughing right now because he knows it's true. Major Drew Nevins, IO officer at the 156th Information Operations Battalion. I can't even put a blanket on that because I think you've done a ton of things in the Guard. You also work full time, though, at Amazon.
I do.
At AWS.
AWS, yeah.
So thanks for joining us, Drew.
Appreciate it's good to be here, Joe. Yeah, we have known each other a long time. I think I was like a lieutenant when we used to drill together in the Seattle Armory.
Yeah, long time ago. So intro and background yourself.
Oh, geez. Okay, so I'm Drew Nevins. Grew up kind of in the Washington area. Went to undergrad at University of Washington. Did ROTC. I'm sure we'll talk about that later. Joined the National Guard when I was a senior in college. And in addition to kind of like, you know, having a Guard career, I've worked a lot of different jobs, but most recently over the last 10 years been in technology. So I was at Microsoft for a short time as a contractor, a few years, and then been at Amazon ever since.
Yeah. So how'd you learn about the Guard?
Funny story. So I was like I was a ROTC active duty scholarship, like a 4-year scholarship guy. I wanted to go to West Point, and I was
so you went to the next best place, UW.
Yeah, to go be Husky.
No, what's funny is we just had a Cougar on yesterday.
So. Oh, okay, yeah. Well, hopefully this episode will be a little better than the Cougar episode with the Huskies on it. But I was all set to go to West Point. I had my nomination letter. Was waiting on hearing back, and I went to like an ROTC information night because my dad's like, you need to have a backup plan just in case. And the PMS at the time was a guy named Colonel Wood, who I think he went on to be like the 8th Brigade ROTC commander. He was a West Point alum. I walked in. I said, yeah, I already have my nomination. I'm just kind of waiting to hear back on my acceptance letter. And he's like, I'll give you a 4-year scholarship to ROTC at UW right now if you want it. Because he was like, you know, everyone was recruiting back then. So he convinced me. He's like, you know, if you're the type of person that wants to have a little bit more freedom, you know, maybe you do some Army, but you know, he knew who he was selling to, an 18-year-old freshman. He's like, you could join a fraternity, you could go to parties on the weekends, and you could still do the Army. And I was like, that sounds pretty good to me. So that was my ROTC decision.
That's how it works.
Yeah, they get you good.
I always remember I was, you know, enlisted, came back home from deployment, and I was like, I don't know about this ROTC thing, and I kind of held off. And it was the PMS that sold to me. He was like, I'm going to give you a 3-year scholarship right now. And sold.
Dude, yeah, any PMS is out there listening right now, like, you guys are probably the best recruiters. You're better than anyone else. Like, you carry a lot of weight.
So, yeah. So you kind of narrowed down your Guard time real quick, but I mean, so you've had a lot of different jobs in the Guard. You're an MP officer, you worked in recruiting for a long time, IO. Kind of talk about those different career paths you've had in the Guard.
Yeah, well, as I said, I was going to be a 4-year like active duty scholarship guy, which in the ROTC world, you know, you do 4 years of college and then you branch into a branch on the active duty side and you serve, you know, your 6 years on active duty, and then at that point you can stay or you can go. But I went to LDAC, the Leadership Development Assessment course, mm-hmm. I think now, did they go back to calling it Advanced Camp now?
I think they call it Advanced Camp.
Yeah. And at the time it was in North Fort. I think now it's at Fort Knox for all the ROTC cadets. But I went to LDAC and I did not have a great time. you know, I was Recondo and like all this cool guy ROTC stuff. But I just, I didn't have a great cadre officer. I kind of felt like, man, these active duty guys are kind of jerks, but there was a National Guard recruiter there. Her name was, Captain Lauren Manabusin, who actually works at Amazon still, which is kind of cool. And she offered me a slice of pizza if I would listen to her Guard pitch during branch days. And so they got me with a slice of pizza. And at the time I thought maybe I wanted to go on to law school and be a JAG attorney. So, you know, her pitch was like, hey, you could join the National Guard and you could, you know, apply to law school and go to law school and you don't need to compete for that branch. Like most cadets have to compete. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. And so I just signed on the dotted line, and my PMS was very upset that I converted my scholarship over to National Guard. But yeah, I branched military police because, again, thought I was going to be a lawyer. So I thought, oh, I'll go get some experience as a cop. Did not end up becoming a lawyer. Also did not become a cop. But I spent the first half, probably 11 years in the Guard as a military police officer. Did some time with the 81st MPs, mm-hmm. which is where we met. And then took command of the 506 Law and Order Detachment, which was in 96th Troop Command. And then got to a point where, like, finished my command up. Still an MP officer. Not a lot of places for MP officers to go after captain. So I went back. I went to the 741st Ordnance Battalion and did some time as a S3, assistant S3 there. And then had, like, a brief second command with their headquarters company. But that was some of my favorite time in the Guard working with the EOD guys. They were so much fun. And then I switched over to information operations, and that's where I've been ever since.
Yeah. What led you to go over to the IO?
Well, people have been telling me for years to go. You know, we both know Eric Sieb and a couple other folks that kind of came into the Guard when the IO was still pretty nascent, and they'd been saying, you know, for years, hey, you got to come over. This is perfect for you. And so it got to the point again in the 741st where I couldn't go anywhere. I wasn't an ordnance officer. I didn't have an EOD badge. And so I needed to kind of figure out what my next move was. And it was going to be probably a functional area and, you know, information operations, functional area 30. So I finally, you know, put together a little letter of introduction and went to a drill and introduced myself to, at the time, Lieutenant Colonel Parker, who was the battalion commander. And it's like, hey, sir, I want to join the unit. I didn't really know a lot about what it was, but I knew that, like, everyone said it's, like, the best place to be in the Guard. And Colonel Parker took a chance on me, and I've been there since 2018.
Yeah. 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 And that was, I think I joined the IO. I went through FA-30 2016. I remember watching the World Series, the 2016 World Series, sitting in my hotel room in Vermont. And that's when no one was in the IO. Like, it was this mythical thing.
This new thing.
That everyone was like, oh, go be FA-30.
I've heard so many stories of those years. Like, there was, like, an assessments, like, team that was a bunch of, like, Green Berets, and their job was, like, go out and do, like, assessments on atmospherics. And I was like, that sounds pretty cool. We don't have those anymore, unfortunately, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately. I think I sat in the one PA spot in the IO for a decently long time. And then finally I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to go back to Intel. And it just so happened it was a perfect time too. I got promoted and then immediately got an S3 job at the 341st.
Perfect.
So it worked out well.
Yeah.
You spent some time at recruiting too.
Yeah. So, like, throughout all that everything I just talked about was, like, just my MDay experience. But I also spent a lot of time doing like on orders with ADOS, like, periodically throughout my Guard career. It started when I was, you know, a baby second lieutenant, almost first lieutenant. Started as, like, a recruiter working for Officer Strength Management, OSM. And, you know, pretty much I was given a desk in Linwood and with a bunch of enlisted recruiters and told to just kind of figure it out. And, like, I remember at the time, I just, like, couldn't believe it. It's like, you guys are going to give me a GSA car, like, and I can just go anywhere and talk to anyone about the Guard. This is amazing. And so I had all the ROTC programs on the western half of the state that I would go speak at. And then in addition, like, when, you know, people came in that were interested in the Guard that had, like, college degrees, recruiters would kind of refer them over to me and we'd work them together. It's where I met one of my best friends, Pedro, who I think you had on the pod.
Had him on here.
Yep.
Shout out to Pedro. Shout out to watching.
Pedro. But yeah, that was an amazing time. I did that for a couple of years. Really, really enjoyed it. And then I left that full-time role in recruiting when I went to go take that contractor job at Microsoft. And that was a contractor company that was actually owned by some guardsmen. And they had, like, a couple different lines of business with Microsoft. There was, like, a security executive protection line of business, some, like, intelligence analysts. And then what I worked on was, like, a risk mitigation line of business, which was so cool. And it was a whole team, probably, like, 12 to 15 people around the world that all worked for this contractor company owned by a couple of National Guard officers. And their job was to protect Microsoft or help senior leaders at Microsoft make decisions and advise them on asset protection, life safety of employees, business operations and reputation during some sort of critical incident. And things like, you know, getting a front row seat, for example, to how Microsoft employees handle critical incidents when, like, Ukraine, you know, when the initial incursion into Crimea happens, right? And you have an office in Kiev with Microsoft employees. Some are Russian, some are Ukrainian. At the time, things were pretty chaotic on the ground and people didn't really know, like, are we going to have to evacuate the office? Like, what's happening? And, you know, a lot of the Microsoft leaders are smart people, but they're not, you know, risk mitigation folks. They're not, they don't have the expertise in this kind of line, the area, right? And so we would go in and we kind of provide them advice and help them, you know, get the right people in the room to make the right decisions. And it was the coolest job ever. Got to travel all over for it. And then left that, went to Amazon in 2016. And yeah, been there ever since.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, what kind of drives you to that field? Like, because you've been kind of in that tech world for a very long time.
Yeah. Well, kind of circling back, like, again, I had initially had a 4-year active duty scholarship, you know, thinking that I was going to do my time in university, get my degree, and then go be an active duty officer. Right. So, you know, when I was looking at what degree do I go get, I wasn't really thinking about civilian job prospects. Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people can empathize. So I just wanted to do something that I enjoyed and that I had fun doing. So I chose English literature because I love to read. I love to write. And so when I did not end up, becoming an active duty officer with that job security, you know, like you graduating right into the recession in 2008, there's not a lot of jobs out there for English majors. You know, I had a bunch of like random jobs, like I talked about recruiting and eventually going to Microsoft, but, you know, my dad was an engineer. I grew up, he worked at Microsoft. He's been there probably over 20 years now. My whole family has kind of an engineering mind. I was like kind of more of the reader. But I think, you know, looking back at it now, it was kind of only natural that I'd find my way back into tech. And, I don't know, I like it. Surrounded by like the smartest people all day long. I constantly feel dumb, which is actually kind of okay. Like it's cause you're always getting smarter. You're always learning.
Yeah.
And so I'm drawn to that part of it. And then just solving interesting problems, I think is really cool. Especially like right now in the age of AI, it's nuts to be working at like a big tech company and just seeing like how they think about the future and, you know, how are they positioning themselves? And what I'm starting to see that I did not see 10 years ago is this really cool, like public private partnership between like government and big tech. 10 years ago, that wasn't a thing. It wasn't popular. You know, and there've been times like in my career, even, where I felt like my military service has been maybe not held against me, but there's been a little bit of like some bias there around like, okay, well, you're just a military guy. And so you obviously think this way, or you have these biases or predispositions, but now there's like this embracing of military culture and what like vets can bring to a big company like that. And it's really cool to feel valued for like the experiences that I have in the Guard and bringing those to Amazon.
Yeah. And you're specifically more in the AWS side. So the web services.
Yeah. Web services, you know, the nerds. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are your primary roles over there?
So this is kind of funny. I'm in design. I went back to UW and I got an engineering degree, and it's an engineering degree in design.
Only took you a few more years.
Yeah. It took me a few more years. Yeah. So I finally, now I'm like aligned with the rest of my family. They can quit making fun of me at, you know, holiday dinners. I'm one of them. And my role now is managing operations for a design team. So think of it kind of like an S3, like an ops officer, very focused on user experience design and research. So in a lot of ways, it's like IO. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a functional area 30 information operations officer, you're kind of like a little baby S3 for these very specific capabilities, right? It's the same thing where I'm kind of managing, you know, work intake for my team. I'm helping assign projects to different designers. I'm helping scope them, understand like, okay, how large is this ask? How long do we think it's going to take us? Do we have the capacity to do it? Trying to sequence those different tasks with a roadmap or a strategy. It's all very similar to kind of the operations role that we do in the Army. In fact, I use a lot of the same frameworks in doing my role at Amazon that I learned in the Army.
Yeah. So this kind of leads into my next question. How your civilian career and your Guard career, kind of how do they work together? So how have you kind of seen that your, you know, being in the Guard has helped in that civilian role?
Yeah. I just got back from a deployment. I was a J39 information operations officer, kind of like section lead for the Special Operations Joint Task Force Operation Inherent Resolve. So SJDF OIR, or actually now they're calling it SJDF Levant because it's more than just the OIR battle space. It's everything from Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Iraq, and other countries, maybe parts of Kuwait, things like that, right? So it was a situation where the majority of time that I was there, I was telling my colleagues, like, this is how we do things in Amazon. Like, it's kind of funny. Like, I was bringing a lot of like the frameworks and mechanisms that I use from that I've learned at Amazon into that military role. But more often I'm actually bringing those military frameworks and mechanisms into my Amazon role. So for example, something that, you know, maybe we take for granted in the military and like how we brief information, you know, we have different types of briefs. We have an informational brief, a decision brief, things like that. Right. That's something I brought to like Amazon, at least to my team, kind of informing my boss or my manager, like, hey, this is just for your information. I don't need a decision from you today. I'm just providing you context for what's happening in my world versus here's the decision we need to get to by the end of this meeting. And I've done all the legwork to bring all the information that you need in order to make that decision and present you multiple courses of action and then provide a recommended one, right? Kind of MDMP light. And so they're very complementary. A lot of the, I would say like 80% of the work that I do is just the operations role. And it's that 20%, this very specific domain knowledge that I have through my degree and experience. So they complement each other really well.
Yeah. And you're absolutely correct. I always think, you know, when we've got guardsmen who are in a civilian capacity of some kind, they always bring that. And then vice versa, right? You know, how they work together. It sounds like you've just kind of have always been able to mirror them because Amazon works well with the military.
Yeah. Like one time I pulled up like the Army design methodology, framework, and I like turned that into some slides and like back briefed it to my Amazon team. And they were just like blown away. They're like, the Army does design. And I was like, well, it's design thinking, right? Like, but it's very similar, like mental models. It's just applied a little bit differently in a different context.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much like me, Drew, you're a feel great officer. You're kind of on the backside of a lot of people's thoughts. You're like, oh man, like, so what's that advice you bring to like maybe those younger officers or those ROTC cadets that are sitting there saying, man, I'm going to be active duty. And now looking kind of at the same thing, right. That we dealt with when we came in.
Yeah.
As officers, I remember, you know, oh wait, you're absolutely correct. I commissioned during a recession time. It was hard skating to find a job at that point.
So. It was. Yeah. I remember there was a time when I was the 506 commander, I had a brand new ROTC cadet, join the unit. She hadn't even been to Bullock yet. Mm-hmm. She hadn't been to her basic officer leadership course yet. And so she had been, assigned a branch, but wasn't officially that branch. Right. I can't even remember what the branch was, but somehow I got her. And, I was kind of told in advance by the battalion headquarters, like, hey, she's a hard charger. And I was like, great. I'll take it. And so she shows up for the first drill and, you know, there's kind of like expected pleasantries, you know, especially if you're a commander and like someone new is showing up to your unit, you expect them to kind of introduce themselves. And then you want to have the sit down introductory chat. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of the, you know, tell me about you and I'll tell you about me. And, you know, you kind of do those introduction kind of getting to know you. And the very first thing she said to me before she'd even like introduced herself was, sir, I'm not supposed to be here. And I was like,
that's cool.
Help me understand what you mean by that. And she was like, I'm trying to go active duty. And so I'm really not supposed to be here in the Guard. And I was like, okay, well, hi, I'm Captain Nevins. Nice to meet you. Why don't you come into my office? Let's sit down and talk. I kind of let her like kind of get it all out. I think it was like a sign of like my emotional maturity at the time. Rather than be upset by that statement, it was kind of funny because it was like, oh yeah, I used to be like that too. Yeah. And so she proceeded to tell me like she was competing for active duty. For some reason or another, she ended up on the wrong side of the cut line. As we all know in RTC, there's like a cut line, you know, you compete on an order of merit list. And if you don't go high enough on that order of merit list, then, you're kind of forced into choosing a guard or reserve commission. Yep. Right. Some people just choose it off the bat. And then some people kind of have to go there. So she was on the wrong side of the cut line, but she was putting in an application for call to active duty because the branch that she had chosen was a low density branch. So she finishes telling me all this. And I said, okay, well, I understand. I commissioned in a recession and I know like, number one, like that active duty job security feels pretty good to have. And then two, I understand there's opportunities available to you in the active duty that you're not going to get in the guard. Yeah. There's also a lot of opportunities in the guard. You are not going to get in active duty. But before we get into any of that, let me just tell you what my perception of you was when you say those things to me in our first 5-minute chat. And I said, what you're essentially telling me is I have drafted you onto my team from AAA, right? Yep. You are now in the big leagues. You are a commissioned officer in the United States Army. And you're essentially telling me, the person who brought you up from AAA, whether it was me or not, but you're like in my unit now, right? Yeah. I don't want to be on your team.
Yeah.
Without even like giving it a chance, not even playing a game yet. You're just saying like, you don't want to be on my team. And I said, how do you think I perceive that? Like, how do you think that makes me feel about investing in you? And she, I think, immediately understood and was like, yeah, no, that's a good point. Probably came out a little strong. And I was like, you did. And again, I'm here to support you. If you want to go active duty, then I want you to go active duty. Cause I'd rather take a cadet that wants to be here. You know, I'd rather take a young officer that wants to be here than not. At the same time, you know, they're maybe be a little more careful next time how you communicate these things. And so that's the advice I would give to like, if you're a cadet or a young officer, like think about how, what you're saying may sound really hardcore and cool to you. And, it isn't always. I've definitely stuck my foot in my mouth many times in my career.
As I think we all have before.
So. And so my advice would just be like, maybe take some time to watch and learn before you come in hot with an idea or an opinion, especially as a junior. And I've been there in my Amazon career too. I had a situation the other week where, you know, I've been doing my operations role for a couple of years. So I figured out where there's areas that I can automate and, you know, maybe shorten the time, to use a military expression, from like flash to bang, right? For achieving certain accomplishments or accomplishing certain tasks. And then I've also learned like, hey, there are some dead ends that may seem like, okay, we can pursue, for example, we can pursue automation over here, but it's going to take us way more time to automate this than it is just for us to just do it. Right? Like, why would we come up with an AI algorithm or something to do something that I can do in 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Yes. Do I have to do it repeatedly every day? Sure. But like, that's why I get paid the big bucks. Yeah. Right. And I had a designer, you know, someone that I support on my team kind of come in hot with some opinions around like, well, we could do this. We could do this. We could do this. And I was like, oh, pump the brakes.
Yeah.
You're kind of assuming that I haven't like thought of that already, which again, I think, you know, you get to a certain point in your career where you have enough experience and you understand that people are coming from the best intentions.
Yeah.
But it still is, you know, like, hey, just chill out. Like your ideas are good, but I've already explored those over the last like 3-4 years. And it is the way it is right now because I'm time constrained. I'm resource constrained. I'm whatever the case is. And it's taught me to also be that way too. Don't assume that like, just because I'm seeing something I think I see a gap that I might have an answer that someone hasn't already thought about, right? I'm not going to come into your office and be like, hey, Joe, have you thought about covering this event? And you're going to be like, oh, man. I've been doing this job for a minute.
I'm glad you say these things.
I have thought about covering that event. I wish I had more people, more time, right? So it's, you learn over time, like, you know, again, I bring it back to working with like some super smart people at Amazon and in the military too. You just got to take like a learner's mindset and just make maybe just observe and, yeah. and figure it out before you come in with solutions.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you throwing that example out there because that happens quite often.
I'm sure.
Really anything else? I think we kind of hit every topic I had, minus the fact that if you are a avid listener of the podcast, well back to our audio time, you do remember Drew's story for our Halloween episode of the Haunted Armories. He shared a pretty awesome tale about the Centralia Armory. Even at Jason and I, feeling some chills about it. So
yeah, I haven't been back to that armory since it was remodeled. And I don't know if what I hear is true or not. Like there's all these rumors flying around like, oh, they dug up old bones in the parking lot or what, and who knows. Right. Yeah. But that place was an interesting, yeah. If you have not listened to that Halloween episode, oof, those were good stories. Yeah, I still tell them
I still tell people about closing the Pullman Armory, the experiences I had there.
So, I'll bet. Yeah.
That's for another time though. So, anything else you want to add, Drew, before we close?
Maybe, I've talked to a lot of vets recently about transitioning out of like the military into technology. So if I could just like maybe use this opportunity to just get some advice out there, having kind of done that transition and then helped a lot of vets transition or even just given different vets advice about it. The biggest thing is to do your own research, like make sure you, take the time to do Google searches, read Reddit, right? And, you know, figure out what you can find out online about a field or a company you're interested in. I get people hit me up all the time. Hey, I'm transitioning out of the Army and I want a job at Amazon. And it's like, well, what do you know about Amazon? You know, like, have you done any research?
Like, shop on Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We all should shop on Amazon. similar to like the decision to join the military, you should, you know, take some time to really think about your decision to, as you're transitioning into a company and, you know, especially some of the senior leaders I've talked to who have, you know, just decades of experience running operations in high stress environments, geographically dispersed under severe resource, you know, limitations, with a lot of what we call at Amazon, like one way door decisions, like, hey, I make this choice and like, there's no going back. Right. A lot of those senior leaders are like, hey, I'm ready for a senior position at Amazon. And the kind of response I always give is, well, you know, sir, ma'am, like, do we hire brigade commanders off the street in the Army? Like, it takes time to develop like the understanding and you can be the smartest person ever. And I've read all the books and everything, but we're still not going to make you a company commander even. Like, you got to do your time working your way up. And there's nothing wrong with that because, you know, some of the best officers and enlisted folk I've worked with have come in at a later stage in life and they bring that life experience with them and they advance through the ranks very quickly. And they're very quickly identified as like someone you can give large amounts of responsibility to, and you want to put them in positions of greater, you know, responsibility and accountability. Same thing at Amazon. Right. So, the advice I'd give a lot of vets that are thinking about transitioning is one, like do some research on the companies you're interested in, make sure you're kind of aligned with what their values are. Amazon's values are very different than what I found to be true at Microsoft. And that's nothing wrong with that. They're just different companies.
It's probably the same for like Google and Apple and all the other.
Yeah, absolutely. Do some research about that and then, you know, make sure your expectations are aligned with reality. And don't think that because you go from a position of high trust, lots of responsibility, accountability, and power in the military, maybe as a senior officer, NCO, that going to like a lower position in a corporate job is a demotion. Like, right? Because in the military, it's kind of seen that way.
Yeah.
In the corporate world, it's not. You know, you're going to bring a lot of that experience with you to that position, and you're going to have a leg up on your peers with that experience, and you'll be able to climb the ladder much quicker than they will. Yeah. So don't stress about coming in at a senior position. Don't stress about, you know, coming in with an equivalent salary. All these things will work itself out over time is what I found. Just come in with like the right mindset, that you're ready to learn and apply what you've learned in the Army to your new job and you'll be great.
Yeah. I think that's fantastic advice and a great way to close. If you like the video, make sure to give it a like. If you have any questions about, you know, what Drew talked about right there at the end about kind of transition from active duty or even the military to the corporate world in some way, definitely throw it in the comments. So we'll make sure to kind of pass that along. Subscribe for future videos. Appreciate you coming on, brother.
Oh, what are we doing this?
Yeah. No, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do that.
Oh, it's good to see you, Joe. Thanks for having me on, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Rock on.